Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
One day the men and dogs were sitting on the crest of a cliff which fell away straight down to naked bedrock 300 feet below. John Thornton was sitting near the edge, Buck at his shoulder. A thoughtless whim seized Thornton, and he drew the attention of Hans and Pete to the experiment he had in mind. "Jump, Buck," he commanded, sweeping his arm out over the chasm. The next instant he was grappling with Buck on the extreme edge while Hans and Pete were dragging them back into safety. "It's uncanny," Pete said, after it was over and they had caught their speech. Thornton shook his head. "No, it is splendid, and it is terrible, too. Do you know, it sometimes makes me afraid." Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Christian Sager. Hey, Robert, have you ever been standing at the edge of like a cliff or a building, or maybe you're waiting for a train, like a subway train? You just think, I should jump.
Well, it never quite manifests itself as I should jump. I find that for me, it manifests itself as, what if I did jump?
Yeah.
And like, it's this intense contemplation of the choice I have in the matter and the fact that I could, if I wanted to, fling myself off of this cliff, you know, fall into the Grand Canyon, go in front of a train. Or a variant of this that I encountered atop the Empire State Building. Have you ever been up to the top of the Empire State Building? You know that they have these, it's basically like being in a cage match. Uh-huh. There's basically no way you could throw yourself off the Empire State Building, at least not on a whim. It would take some planning and some effort. But what I did find myself struggling with was, what if I threw my wallet over the side and down into the street below? That would be horrible. And so I ended up wrestling with that possibility, which is kind of like throwing a piece of your life over the side.
Yeah. Isn't there that adage, and I think How Stuff Works has even done an article on this, about like what happens when you throw a penny over the side of the Empire State Building?
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's the urban legend is that it can kill a person. Yeah. I don't know what the science is behind that.
I seem to recall it doesn't quite pan out.
Okay.
But, it's been a while since I've looked at that one, but I'm not going to go throwing pennies over. I feel like my wallet would maybe just bonk somebody in the head a little bit. My wallet would probably not go through somebody.
Yeah. Well, the other one of these is, captured in, Woody Allen's Annie Hall movie.
Oh, yeah.
When Christopher Walken is talking about how he wants to swerve into traffic and at night, he's looking at the other headlights coming the other way.
Mm-hmm.
They're all related. And this is, you out there are probably going like, this is real morbid, guys. Where are you going with this? This is an actual phenomenon so common that it has multiple names and there has been a major study done on it. So we're going to cover that today. It is the sudden feeling that we want to put ourselves in harm's way. Examples of this often include the urge to jump off a tall building or to veer into oncoming traffic. The French term for it is l'appel du vide, which means call of the void. Which I really like. And that's how I came to this was there's this pretty brutal hardcore band that I like called Call of the Void.
Uh-huh.
And I was typing it into Google the other day and an article on this phenomenon popped up and I was like, I've never heard of this before. And then I said to you, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew about it. I've had the experience, but
I feel like most people have had the experience. I would definitely like to hear from anyone who has not had some variant of this. Now, you mentioned that it's called, often referred to as Call of the Void, and some of our listeners might have recommended the reading at the top of the episode as being from Jack London's 1903 novel, The Call of the Wild. I like how this particular bit from that novel, certainly this is the main part of the novel that always sticks out in my mind, because it gets into similar territory as The Call of the Void. The idea that with a split decision, you could bring being into unbeing.
Yeah.
In this case, it's the dog, and really, but the dog also represents much about the central character in The Call in the Wild as well.
What's strange about it is it's like the ultimate form of control when you feel like you don't have control, right? It's
right.
Like this ultimate expression where you're like, oh, like you think I don't have control over anything? The one thing I can totally control is I could just kill myself right now if I wanted to, which is horrible to think about. But we're going to get into it. There's like a lot of theories as to where this thing comes from. I don't know about you, but like when I've experienced it, I feel it in the pit of my stomach. Like it's like a full body sensation. It's not just like a little like thought like, huh, I wonder if I jumped, you know, there's this weird.
Yeah.
Gravity
to it. This visceral kind of vibe from it. It's not so much like you're having to hold yourself down.
Right.
But sometimes you do kind of, I have been in places where I feel like I kind of want to squat down and maybe touch the ground a little bit.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not near the edge. Now, one thing I will say is that I have not felt this recently because I find that when I am in places with ledges or anything of that nature, I tend to be there with my wife and son.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
I'm more concerned about them falling out off the
right.
edge, especially my son
being
like just 4 going on 5. He falls off of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So like he ends up generating all of my anxiety about people falling or jumping. And I guess I have less room for myself.
Sure. Well, that makes sense based on the cognitive dissonance theory that we're going to talk about today, that your parental authority would like override the biological like brain stuff that's going on theoretically here that causes it. There's a whole theory as to what causes this. Seems close, but let's go through all this stuff and kind of figure it out. Before we do that, I wanted to add a Jean Paul Sartre observed this decades ago, and he said that this emotion is unsettling because it creates an unnerving, shaky sensation of not being able to trust one's own instincts, which is really interesting. Like, I hadn't even thought about it as that like you feel like. So I just expressed it as a thing where it's like you feel like you're in total control, but then his version of it is you're totally out of control.
Well, it's kind of the, you know, it's another reason I like the Call of the Wild quote here, because he talks about this thing being splendid and terrible at the same time.
Yeah.
And to stand, it's like standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon. Like the Grand Canyon is an awesome experience to see that much emptiness, but it's also you feel vulnerable.
And if you're going to go and you want to go in style, that seems like that would be kind of like a beautiful way to do it.
Well, a lot of people have.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not suicidal. Don't think that, audience. And we're going to talk about suicidal thoughts in relation to this as well, because it's a pretty serious topic. But I could, there is a beauty to it. And, this is where Mr. Sigmund Freud comes in, and we'll talk about that as well. But first, let's look at the more recent study. This is really the hinge of this episode. So in 2011, a team of scientists from Florida State University decided to investigate it. And this was in the Journal of Affective Disorders. And the authors of the paper were led by a woman named Jennifer Hames. She was a graduate student, and she's currently faculty at Notre Dame. And this was at FSU's Joyner Lab. And you might be going, why would anybody want to study this? Like, where would this come from? Well, the idea here is that it could shine light on the whole idea of a death drive, that some suicides are impulsive and have nothing to do with depression. And that was interesting. I hadn't really thought of that before myself, but I could, reading up more on Freud's death drive theory, I guess I could see where that came from.
Yeah, I do have to say, for my own part, I'll entertain the possibility that that exists, but I'm rather doubtful that suicide can occur or does occur in any significant, to any significant degree, completely isolated from depression or willful intent.
Yeah.
Like the idea that someone's just like, oh, I could jump off the, into the canyon and die. Let's do it. Bam. Done. End of deal.
Yeah.
Like I can see the impulse being a factor if there is already some underlying depression, or if one already had some sort of a plan in mind, and this is just like, this is the day that I act on it.
Yeah. So I think that it's worth saying, like, from my subjective experience, like I said, I myself am not suicidal, and I've had what we will refer to later as suicidal thinking, but I've never had suicidal planning. And there's a major difference, right? And this is sort of the call of the void, the high place phenomenon. Those are versions of suicidal thinking. That's about as far as it's gone for me, right?
Yeah. Well, suicidal thinking, I feel like, is often tied into with the romance of suicide, because we have so many stories, and these generally are very lopsided in their presentation of suicide, that display it as this noble poetic thing that doomed dreamers and doomed lovers.
Yeah, Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but
And we've all been teenagers, so we've all had moments where we're like, oh, my life is so tragic, and you might envision this scenario. But there's to your point, there's a difference between envisioning it, daydreaming about it, and thinking about what everyone will say when you're gone versus actually putting some sort of plan in place.
But for our listeners, I do want to establish up front, I have experience with people who were suicidal or have committed suicide. So I am sympathetic to that, and I don't want this episode to feel like it's callous. This is connected to that, but it's the suicidal thinking that goes along with call of the void syndrome seems to be a far cry from the actual act of it. But we're going to get into that at the end of the episode. So back to this research, they found that more than 30% of the people they talked to said they had experienced this phenomenon at least once. And the researchers refer to it in their study as high place phenomenon. They weren't taking into account like throwing yourself in front of a train or driving into oncoming traffic. They were also curious whether it was related to a person's history of suicidal thinking. And from their findings, they found that it is common even among people who have no depression or suicidal thinking history. So this was their methodology. They asked 431 college students whether and how often they had experienced the urge to jump off of tall things. Then they examined their depressive symptoms and their history of suicidal thoughts. They also took a look at how sensitive these people were to anxiety, as well as how fearful they were of anxiety symptoms, such as an elevated heartbeat and shortness of breath. Among those who had never had suicidal thoughts, still, 17% of them had experienced the urge to jump. Among those who had experienced suicidal thoughts, 56% experienced it. So that's significant. If it lines up. Now, we'll talk, there's a little bit of methodology stuff of this that I'm calling to question. The researchers were also interested specifically in the sensitivity to reactive safety signals and if that corresponded to a higher likelihood of experiencing the urge to jump. So to mark this reactivity, they looked at levels of anxiety sensitivity, such as a faster heartbeat. This was because previous research suggested that high anxiety sensitivity is actually tied to a tendency for us as human beings to misinterpret random innocuous bodily sensations as being dangerous.
Yeah, we tend to make that error in cognition, mm-hmm. You know, because there is a survival advantage in jumping to conclusions rather than not making any conclusions. One gets you eaten by a tiger. One just means you go about your daily life constantly looking for the tiger that might eat you.
Yeah. I mean, I've actually experienced this, I'd say, in like the last 2 weeks, where like I'll get up and I'll read about current events in the news and my heart will start beating rapidly and I'll go, oh, is there something wrong? Do I need to go see my doctor? And I realize, oh, it's anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's not normal, but I'm having a normal anxious reaction to the things that I'm reading about, right?
Yeah.
But then my thought is like, oh, what if I have a heart attack? You know? So this is kind of along those lines where the idea is that we misinterpret these random bodily sensations as being dangerous. Okay. So their study's finding was that yes, more sensitivity to anxiety was related to the frequency of the urge to jump, especially in people who had never experienced suicidal thoughts. They also interpreted this as people without a history of suicidal thoughts as being more sensitive to bodily cues that they could misinterpret. So that's interesting. So if you've never experienced suicidal thoughts, they're saying you're more likely to interpret, say, like your heart beating faster as something of danger. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like if you've ever had an anxiety attack,
right?
If you have one and they're rare, then the first time you have one, it can be extremely alarming.
Yeah.
Because you think, oh goodness, I'm about to die now.
So the study ultimately translates as follows. People with high anxiety sensitivity were more likely to have higher chances of suicidal thoughts. Okay, that makes sense. So if you're sensitive to the bodily reactions and you're worried about being anxious, then you're more likely to have suicidal thoughts. But subsequently, you were also more likely to report experiencing this call of the void phenomenon. So that's interesting. Why do we experience this, though? Like, where is this coming from?
Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll dive into that very question. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
All right, we're back.
So one theory about this call of the void phenomenon, or the idea of high place phenomenon, is that there's something going on with a temporary uncoupling of our different perceptual systems in our brains. It's kind of like cognitive dissonance.
The idea, and this comes up all the time on the podcast, idea that you have two different ideas, two different inclinations in your mind, and they conflict with each other. Mm-hmm. So the classic, the easy one to go to here, of course, is, I think homosexuality is wrong, but I have homosexual thoughts in my head. These two do not go with one another. And this generates, it's kind of a friction in the mind.
Exactly. So their theory was that when you're standing on the edge of a skyscraper, your brain has fast fear circuitry. That's what they called it. Obviously, it's not circuitry. And this may alert you of danger, just the danger of, hey, you could fall. But then our perceptual system in our brain is slower than our fear system. And that kicks in afterwards and it makes you realize there's actually no danger. So to make sense of the safety signal, our brain mixes this up as cognitive dissonance and we assume we want to jump, which is why people get confused by this. So this is interesting. So individuals who are experiencing this are not necessarily suicidal. Instead, it seems to reflect their sensitivity to internal cues affirming their actual will to live. So that lines up with what we were saying earlier, that they're sensitive to like, oh, I'm feeling anxious or, oh, I'm feeling depressed or whatever. So it makes sense that they would be more sensitive to their, both their fear system and their perception system.
Yeah. I do like how the main idea here is that you're safe, but you're still taking in the sensory data that says you're not safe.
Yeah.
And I think that we actually get a little bit of this when we watch a particularly terrifying video. Mm-hmm. Like we've all watched, especially in the age of GoPro, I'm sure everyone has seen like base jumping, crazy skiing videos, stuff with great heights or people climbing up antennas. Yeah. And you watch it and you couldn't be more safe watching it in your living room, in your office, on your phone or your personal computer. But you feel a visceral, it's probably empathic, but also you're taking in certain sense data about a dangerous environment and you can't help but feel part of that.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think I'm leaning towards agreeing with this theory. Mm-hmm. But let's remember that this study, there's only one study on this as far as I can tell, and it isn't conclusive. Their explanation is simply theoretical, and it doesn't have neurological evidence. The methodology also has some weaknesses, so let's acknowledge those. First of all, they only used university students, and let's be honest, university students are not representative of humanity.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, it tends to be a profile of a very specific socioeconomic, racial division of society.
Yeah. And the volunteers themselves were confessing, well, they may have misremembered their experience or even falsely reported it. So that doesn't mean the study's flawed. It just means we need more research. So a proposal for this is to actually conduct an experiment where scientists would have to take subjects and position them at different heights to test at what elevation they begin having the thought to jump. And there is another explanation that goes along, I think, with what you were saying about the watching those videos, which is that it could simply be connected to our thrill of not buckling under fear, which is a kind of cognitive dissonance. This is the same reason why we go to haunted houses, right?
Yeah.
Both real and, fun haunted houses. But like, think about it, like when you're a little kid and somebody says, let's go, that house over there is haunted. I dare you to go into it, right? It's kind of the same vibe. And then subsequently you go to something like, I don't know, our version is Netherworld here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You go to that, you know somebody's going to jump out with a fake chainsaw and try to scare you. But the thrill of overcoming that fear is part of why you go and pay money to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it fills you with endorphins. You're very much living in the moment. People who aren't into meditation or yoga, right. They still might go to a haunted house or watch a scary movie. And that's kind of meditative in a sense. It puts you in the now.
Yeah, it's probably another reason why jump scares are so successful in horror films, right? Yeah. There's an addiction to it.
Yeah, and it's simple and it works and it ties into our basic evolutionary state to be on the lookout for the tiger that jumps out of the grass. Now, there's another take on all of this, and it ties in, I think, nicely to what you said about the varying heights. At what height does it kick in?
Yeah.
For my own part, I feel like there is definitely a difference between any call of the void that occurs at lower heights,
yeah,
as opposed to like truly awesome heights, like Grand Canyon, cliff edge type heights.
Right, total obliteration.
Yeah, total obliteration, I think, is the thing, because it would be such a drastic choice, okay? It would be such a choice between life and I don't know, almost to say death, like puts too much of an atmospheric twist on it, but more like between being and unbeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I keep thinking this is the two roads diverge in a Yellow Woods approach. So in the choose your own adventure book that is life, we encounter plenty of forking paths, right? But many of these are hardly choices at all. I mean, on some level, we all choose whether we're going to go to work this morning or find a liquor store and drink our purchase in the woods behind the store. You
know? Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I mean, for most of us.
A lot of people struggle with that every morning.
Well, some people realistically do.
No, I'm not being sarcastic. Yeah. Yeah.
But for many of us, it's not really a choice. Like the things we do are the things we do. We have this pattern and this is where we get into that idea that we're not really making choices in life at all. However, there are choices that are more real than others, where two paths of equal weight and possibility are presented. And what is weightier than the old to be or not to be, the choice between being and unbeing that stands before us when we stand at the edge of a great expanse? So it's not so much that we're tempted, but that our path-choosing brain can't help but engage in one of its many cognitive superpowers, cognitive superpower that we all possess and use to thrive. And this is chronesthesia, which is also known as mental time travel. So this entails our ability to be aware of our past and future and to envision multiple possible futures before us. So it's the key to our survival, but it's also the reason you might listen to NPR in the morning and mentally time travel to the dawn of the Third World War.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's that anxiety again.
Yeah, the anxiety comes out and you feel it in your body.
Yeah.
So in that moment, in the car listening to NPR, we're forced to wonder what we're capable of, what we're willing to lose to gain. And on some level, it's kind of like the, you know, the scene in the Old Testament with Abraham raising his dagger up in the sky and then above his son Isaac.
Yeah.
And it's just, will the hand of the angel come in time to spare him?
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Looking to something beyond, which gets into the Freudian aspect of it. Yeah.
So that's another possible explanation for it. I tend to feel like we've got some of this, definitely a part of it, but I also think the cognitive dissonance argument is also very valid.
Yeah.
And it does, like, we've talked before on the show about how situations of cognitive dissonance often lend themselves well to supernatural experience. That's not to say actual supernatural occurrence, but the experience of something supernatural happening to us.
Especially in our demon possession exorcism addorcism episode, that is hugely tied to cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, and when you get down to it, like the idea of encountering the choice between being and unbeing, this kind of panicky pondering over to what extent you have free willed, to what extent you have control over your fate. I mean, that's pretty supernatural sounding to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is a good opportunity for us to get into a guy who, let's be honest, in some situations was quasi supernatural. and his name was Sigmund Freud. So Freud, after a lot of his better known principles, connected this to, well, the phenomenon to an idea that sometimes is referred to as a death wish, although that just calls to mind Charles Bronson for me. But it is referred to as the death drive, articulated in his 1920 essay Beyond the Pleasure Principle. And this describes a drive in all of us towards self-destruction and a return to the inorganic. Now, I used a paper by Joanne Faulkner on the subject to sort of unpackage this. Now, she argues that the death drive is when Freud departs from scientific methodology entirely, and it articulates what he thought of as higher functions in the psyche that weren't necessarily empirical. Okay. So this is why I say, like, we're getting into supernatural territory here. Freud thought this was beyond science.
Okay.
It's highly speculative and it's not grounded in scientific perspective, but Freud's idea was that the death drive circumvented our pleasure in an effort to undo a person as an organic whole. And so as such, it gave us both pleasure and discomfort. And I can sort of see where he's coming from here based on like what we were previously talking about with like, I don't know, scares, right? Like it's both pleasurable and uncomfortable. But his idea, of course, being Freud, there has to be this model framework that everything fits within. And it was that the death drive was the opposite of what he called the life drive or the libido. And while the libido attaches itself to others and creates ties of affection, the death drive destroys relationships and strives for disintegration. So if the libido manifests in sex, the death drive manifests in aggression. And if this is directed inward, it could result in suicide. But here's the thing. Does the death drive lead to what we today understand as depression, right? Like Freud didn't really have a grasp on that the way we do now. It's possible if it's directed inward, I guess. But in fact, some Eastern philosophy indicates that self-centered acts may be a form of this kind of self-destruction, that selfishness itself isolates us from others, leads us to not having support. So maybe there's a little bit of a connection between depression and death drive. I don't know. I'm not 100% on board with this. I see how it could sort of make sense at the time, and it's connected to thoughts that we're having, but...
Huh. What is interesting, you mentioned the Eastern philosophies. It is interesting to think of self-destruction perhaps as it's not merely, well, let's say to take self-destruction and think of it in terms of the wheel of samsara and the different states and the idea that, you know, you're reincarnated into to upper and lower forms.
Yeah.
One of the realms is that of the hungry ghosts, where one is just, you know, constantly grasping for something and unable to fill yourself with it. And there's another realm, which is more of the hell realm. And this is where I feel like things really line up with this idea of death drive, just this, you know, rageful, assault on the things that anger you.
I can give you like a personal version of this that I experience, and this might be a little bit TMI, mm-hmm. but I often am compelled by the urge to just go be somewhere in complete isolation. Mm-hmm. Like, I think when I have this urge, it's like, oh, I like a rundown motel in the middle of nowhere off of a highway somewhere. Right. Uh-huh. And I'll just sit in there for a week. Like there's something about that that's just very compelling to me. And I don't want to destroy myself. I don't want to commit suicide, but there's something about it that draws me there. Right. And I think, based on what you're talking about here, so there's a similar idea here, right? Like, if you believe in reincarnation and you think to yourself, well, if I die, I'm going to be reincarnated possibly as a lower life form, right? There's something kind of zen about that, right? There's something kind of relaxing about the idea of like, I'll come back as a toad. I'll just live life as a toad and I won't have as many concerns to bear.
It's true. Yeah. Now, but I like this idea that you brought up here too, because it also brings to mind like what each of us are.
Yeah.
So we're an organism that's alive. But we're also an organism that's generally moving in various, social spheres. And you have all of these kind of like invisible spider webs of social obligation all around us. And so to walk away from all of that for say a week and go to this cabin in the woods, you are not necessarily destroying yourself, but you might be doing damage to these various social spider webs that have bound you up.
Totally.
And I can see where it would be at once liberating to walk away from all of those. But then at the same time, many would argue, well, that is self-destructive. You were doing damage to these social structures that help maintain you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's compelling too, yeah. Right? The pop culture example of this that drew me in the most, and my wife immediately recognized it when we saw this, and she's like, you love this, don't you? Was, and spoilers for this TV show, if you don't want to, you might learn something you don't want to know about Breaking Bad here. But in Breaking Bad, there's a point where the main character goes in hiding to New Hampshire for a year. Mm-hmm. And he just lives in a small cottage with nothing but like, you know, canned food and newspapers for a year. And he just sits there and thinks on what he's done and sleeps and eats and he just is. And he's entrapped by snow when we find him. Mm-hmm. And I saw it and I was just like, oh God, that seems like the best vacation ever to me. But at the cost of all of his social relationships, yeah. Which is sort of the point in the show.
This reminds me a lot of a Warren Zevon song that when I have this feeling, I'll play this song and listen to it. It's called Splendid Isolation. Have you heard this?
No.
It's great because the lyrics are basically rolling through these three or four different scenarios that he is craving. Like, I want to live on the Upper East Side and never go down in the street, you know, put tinfoil up on the window. I want to live in the desert like Georgia O'Keeffe, you know, mm-hmm. These different scenarios where Warren is talking about just walking away from everything and just encapsulating himself in total isolation and ultimately kind of self-destructive self-centeredness, because he ends up making comparisons to Neverland Ranch.
Interesting.
Locking yourself up in your own private Disney world, that sort of thing.
Well, I never put tinfoil on my window, but in my 20s, I have to admit, I took cardboard and nailed it up over all the windows in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Just cause like I wanted complete and utter darkness in there.
Did you have a blacklight poster?
No. Okay. No, I didn't.
Missed opportunity for a really cool mushroom wizard blacklight poster there.
Well, back to this Freud thing. I think it reeks of the subjective. It's a little bit of magical thinking, which is fun, but most people in this realm, in this discipline, think of it as being eccentric. Regardless, it does apply to depression. If you understand that there's an innate voice that wishes for death and destruction, well, that's helpful, right? At least in therapy, you can help separate that and distance yourself from those thoughts. And that takes away their power and allows you to challenge them and minimize them and disregard them. So there's something to that. People who just like outright dismiss Freud, I'm sort of in the middle. Like, I don't buy it 100% of the time, but I do think that there's some value in that he helped the profession sort of edge along slowly.
Yeah, I mean, I always come back to my lens analogy, where would I want to walk around with the Freud lens in place all the time, with my Freud goggles on all the time? No, I would not. But I do find it is helpful in varying scenarios to pull the Freud lens down over my own vision, over my own worldview, and think, oh, well, how might this apply to the current scenario? How does Freud illuminate what's going on here?
Well, why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, we're going to delve into some actual statistics about suicidal thinking that may help us unravel this Call of the Void phenomenon a little more.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
All right, we're back.
So when mental health professionals refer to these Call of the Void moments, they usually call it suicidal ideation. But that term seems broad for our purposes here today. So let's try to separate out what the difference might be. Okay. In 2011, the CDC conducted a really big study examining statistics about suicide, suicidal thinking, suicidal preparation. And they found that 3.7% of adults in the United States had had suicidal thoughts in just the last year. Now, let's put that into perspective. That's 8.3 million people. That's a lot of people. Other studies have placed this even higher, saying that it's actually around 8 to 10% of the population. Now, let's look at the previous study on the high place phenomenon. That's not even close to the 30 to 50% of people who reported that they had experienced that phenomenon, right? So it seems like what we think of as suicidal ideation and high place phenomenon or call of the void, those are different, it seems like. It suggests that there's some kind of different thought process going on there.
Yeah, and of course with all of this, it depends on exactly how you're phrasing the question and how the individual on the other end views suicidal thoughts, et cetera. I mean, because a big thing is like, what does that individual's culture say about suicide?
Yeah.
Now, even this is the kind of thing that we would have to bust out in a longer episode. But even within the United States, you're going to have varying subsets of people that are going to have different ideas about suicide.
Yeah, and that actually plays into these statistics as well. In the CDC report, they actually summarized the data on 92,264 respondents. But this establishes a difference between having suicidal thoughts and actually making plans for a suicide or attempting it. Mm-hmm. Plans and attempts are very different from just thinking about it, okay? The estimates vary based on a couple things, socio-demographic factors, as well as the region of the country that you live in. So what you're just saying, here we go. Suicidal thoughts were higher among young adults between the ages of 18 to 29 than they were for people over 30. It was also significantly higher for women in general. Non-Hispanic whites were the group with the highest prevalence of suicidal thoughts, while non-Hispanic Asians were the group with the lowest suicidal thoughts. And regional factors, this is really complicated, but they think it could be related to indicators such as divorce rates or resources to access like healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so the cause and effect relationship here is unknown, but there's a couple things, like for instance, adults with less than a high school education and those who were unemployed at the time were more likely to have these thoughts. Finally, those in the Midwest and the West were more likely to have suicidal thoughts than those in the Northeast and the South. Now, I don't know how to unpack that, but what you presented sounds close, which is that like various cultures have different beliefs about suicide, right? And, or like they said, that there's like real world factors like how much access they have to healthcare or, right, or do they have a job? Things like that. So there's limitations to this accounting, though, that we should note as well. For instance, previous studies indicate that adults, when they're talking about suicidal thoughts, they underreport, especially when they're talking about when they were adolescents. So if they're adults now and they're saying, well, when I was an adolescent, this is how often I experience that, they're known to underreport. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, you're a different person when you're an adult than when you're an adolescent. So you're really kind of teasing apart the thoughts and motivations of a different you entirely.
Yeah.
So I can see where there might be a tendency to say, oh, well, that 20-year-old me, that 18-year-old me, he didn't know what he was talking about. No, he wasn't serious about that.
And this study also didn't account for a couple populations. First of all, institutionalized populations, which mm-hmm. would probably have, I mean, we would assume would have a higher rate of thinking about suicide. And it totally cut out any kind of Native American populations. So, and that wasn't like on purpose. It was just because they didn't have access to enough, evidence.
Yeah. I think there is a large factor here that comes down to, is suicide an open pathway to this individual? Is it at all socially acceptable? To what degree is it socially acceptable?
Yeah, right.
And that is going to be governed by your culture, your history, indeed what books and movies, what bits of fiction mm-hmm. you value.
Right.
These are all going to help to skew this idea of whether or not suicide is a practical option for an individual.
Yeah, but very different from the idea of standing on a ledge and looking and just kind of getting that urge to jump.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So that's why I've put these statistics in here to sort of just give you like, these are very different things. And we can see the statistical differences just between these two studies. It's also worth remembering all of this stuff for both studies is self-reported, and that is not 100% reliable.
Now, to sort of pull out of the gloomier aspects of this this topic, I will ask everyone to think about the call of the void. You know, the situation in which the gravity of disastrous choice is, you know, it's not merely anxiety inducing or threatening to one's sense of self-control, but it is exhilarating. It's sort of a endorphin pumping high that one achieves from skydiving or even less dangerous, smaller acts. And plus, what is the true call of the void? But a contemplation, however unformed, of oblivion, a complete emptying of self, not merely hearing the call of the void, but kind of touching the void, having almost a spiritual moment. To go back to that quote from Call of the Wild again, you know, something that is at once splendid and terrible.
Yeah. And so as we've been doing in some of our episodes recently, we want to make sure if you heard this and this like touched upon something for you and you were hearing these statistics or whatever, and you thought, well, this resonates within me and I'm a little concerned. There's actually a nonprofit that we would like to throw a line out to so that you, in case you're feeling that way, have some support. And it's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's a support line. It's 24/7. It's free. It's totally confidential. It's for people who are in distress, and it helps prevent crises and provides resources for you and your loved ones. So maybe it's not you. Maybe it's somebody you know. So the number for that is 1-800-273-8255. Again, it's 1-800-273-8255.
All right. And hey, if you want to hear more episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, if you want to check out videos, blog posts, you name it, links out to our social media accounts, head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com.
That's right. And I want to hear from you, the audience. Have you experienced the call of a void? Have you thought about jumping off a tall building or the Grand Canyon or maybe even onto a train track before? But of course, you didn't want to. You just got mixed up with these feelings inside. Mm-hmm. That's basically how we all feel nowadays. I'm just so mixed up with these feelings inside. Let us know. You can let us know on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, or Instagram, or you can write us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
And to close out here today, I'm just going to read another quote. This one comes from a book by Robert Graves. A number of you may be familiar with him from his more popular work, such as I, Claudius. But he also wrote a book called Goodbye to All That. And he talks about the Great War. He talks about mountain climbing. And this is just a quick quote where he talks about climbing. My worst climb was on Lilwid, the most formidable of the precipices, when at a point that needed most concentration, a raven circled round the party in great sweeps. I found this curiously unsettling, because one climbs only up and down, or sideways, and the raven seemed to be suggesting diverse other possible dimensions of movement, tempting us to let go our hold and join him.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from revisionist history. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.